This coming week, we're going to highlight a day on the calendar which is known as Asar B'Teves. Asar B'Teves is a fast day. I think that when we have a fast day, as we know, Chazal had set up a number of fast days throughout the calendaric year, which are supposed to make us remember about Churban Yerushalayim and Churban Beis Hamikdash. In a regular time, those fast days, the Gemara says, are Ratzu Mesanim, Ratzu Ein Mesanim. Some people have the practice to fast, some people do not have the practice to fast. Today, as we know, everybody has the custom that we all fast on these designated days. However, the Gemara does say that when you're living in an Eis Tzara, when you're living through a difficult period in Jewish history, when the Jewish people are being oppressed, it is an absolute obligation to fast on these fast days. You'll notice that Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av are much more severe in the halachos that govern them than the rest of the public fast days. We know that Asar B'Teves and Tzom Gedalia, of course, are not going to be as serious or as severe as Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. I was actually talking to my father this week that the assumption, the reason why we assume that they are not as severe is because we assume that there's no real obligation to fast on those days, and that is why we are makel in many areas. However, when the Gemara says that when you're living through an Eis Tzara, you have to take this on much more seriously, I asked my father, why do we not have the Chamesh Inuyim on these fast days also? Why don't we take them as severely as Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av? It's a question. It's an important question. The point being, if you didn't follow that point, it's fine. But my point in all of this is that I think it's important for us to realize that there is a uniqueness to Asar B'Teves this year than to what it may have meant to us in many other experiences that we've had in the past. When we live through an Eis Tzara and we have a day on the calendar that is designated to fast, then that means we have to take it much more seriously and understand. And I know it's hard for people to fast, but Asar B'Teves is the easiest of all the fasts that we have during the year. It is the shortest time of the year. It is not that hard. It is not a 24-hour fast or anything close to it. We should make it meaningful. We should do whatever we can to spend our day in a meaningful way and to make sure that we remind ourselves of not only Churban Beis Hamikdash, but Churban of so many other Churbanos, so many other things that are destroyed right now that can use our tefillah and that can use our heart and our feeling. Just this week, somebody showed me a short clip from a Sfardish Rav in Eretz Yisrael. I think his name was Rav Abergel. I don't know who he is, but he apparently is a big personality in Eretz Yisrael. So somebody showed me a short clip that he had where a chayal had come to him and said that he's a dati, he's frum, and he's been fighting out on the front. And he came to this rabbi and he told him that he feels that the first couple of weeks that he was out there, he felt the tefilos of the Jewish people were carrying him. And he said he feels now that that's just not there. He feels that the people have not cared as much, and he doesn't feel strength behind him. To me, whether the story's true or not, I have no idea. But I trust that this Rav is probably not making it up. And I trust that the Chayal is probably saying what he really feels. I don't see any reason why either of them wouldn't tell the truth. But to me, it was very sad. It was very sad. And I think all of us remember how right after Simchas Torah, we all came to shul every night of the week. Every shul was packed, and we took it very seriously. Imagine if it was your son who was on the front lines. You would still be coming to shul every night, and you wouldn't be taking time to do other things. You would be focusing on what your job is. And the greatest part of your job is to offer a tefillah, to come together Berov Am Hadras Melech, to come together with others, and to offer a tefillah. It's the least that we can do. Of course, everybody is participating in different ways, but to have a chayal come back from the front lines and share with us that he feels we are not with him is something that to me was very heartbreaking. To me, that I think we all need to take to heart, and I include myself in that as well. I think we all need to take those words to heart and think about them very carefully. So let's just try today to talk about Asar B'Teves, because I think it's important for us to realize what the story was all about, what are we commemorating on Asar B'Teves, and to realize how important it is and how relevant it continues to be in the story and the history of the Jewish people. So we begin. Asar B'Teves is, anybody know, in commemoration of first Beis Hamikdash, second Beis Hamikdash? Anybody have a clue? I'm not going to embarrass anyone. The answer is it's in commemoration of the first Beis Hamikdash. So let's go through a little bit of the history of the first Beis Hamikdash, its inception, where it came from, what ended up happening during the Tkufa of the Bayis Rishon, and let's see if we can learn anything from that entire story. We begin in Sefer Shmuel. It's Shmuel Beis, Perek Zion, where the Sukkim describe a beautiful experience. Vayhi ki yashav hamelech bebeiso. V'Hashem hiniach lo misaviv. Let's try to remember, you know, Tehillim is a beautiful sefer, and we read Tehillim all the time. Part of the reason why we identify so much with Tehillim is because David HaMelech went through so many experiences in his own life that were so varied and were so complicated, and his response, his reaction was Sefer Tehillim. But when you read through it, although it's very beautiful, when you read through it, you begin to understand how many complications he had in his life. And that cannot be overstated. It is really unbelievable to think about how much he went through. You have the story of David and Goliath. Let's back it up a little bit also. When did everything start in David HaMelech's life? So he goes down in history as David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. David HaMelech is an eternal figure of the Jewish people that we always talk about and we'll never forget and we always celebrate, and it all sounds great, but it all started, we say a pasuk in Hallel, Even Ma'asu Habonim Haisa L'Rosh Pina. What does that mean? All the Mefarshim explain it in the same way. The Gemara tells us what it means. Even Ma'asu Habonim means there was a stone that all of the builders just, Ma'asu means they weren't interested in it. But Haisa L'Rosh Pina, in the end, that stone that nobody paid any attention to ended up being, Rosh Pina means the cornerstone. That's where all the foundation came from. What is that a reference to? David HaMelech is describing himself. And he was one of a number of children in his family. I think there were 7 boys. I forgot to look it up this morning. All of them were extremely talented, very charismatic personalities. All of them had a lot to contribute. And none of them believed in the possibility that anything would come from little David, who at the time seemed to be nothing special. David HaMelech said about himself, Even Ma'asu Habonim. I was that stone that all of my family decided to neglect and disregard. Nobody paid attention to me. And in the end, Haisa L'Rosh Pina. I, little David, who was playing in the sandbox, who nobody paid attention to, I ended up being Rosh Pina. I became David Melech Yisrael, contrary to everyone else's opinions, contrary to what everyone else ever imagined for me. That's the first thing we need to think about with our own children. Don't ever underestimate the value of any child. And just because you think this is going to be the child who's going to be great and amazingly successful, and that one maybe a little bit less so, David HaMelech teaches us, look at my life. Nobody believed in me. Nobody thought there would be any future of success in my life. And not only was I successful, I was the most successful Jew of the entire community at the time. So that was the first thing. When Shmuel comes, Shmuel was the Navi. We're told in Chumash that when you have a Melech that has to be singled out, so a Navi has to anoint him. So a Navi comes, Shmuel HaNavi comes to Yishai. David was the son of Yishai. Shmuel HaNavi comes to Yishai. I wish I taught Tanakh, actually. I wish we had an opportunity to do that. So Shmuel comes to Yishai. You're saying we should. Okay. So Shmuel comes to Yishai, and he wants to anoint his son as the Melech. Shmuel has an instruction of what he's supposed to do. So first they go to the oldest son, Eliav. Eliav was the oldest son of Yishai, David HaMelech's oldest brother. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he's very charismatic, he's very impressive. But listen to this line. Ha'adam nira le'inayim, v'Hashem yira le'levav. Yeah, he's very charismatic and he's very good looking. But human beings look at externals. Ha'adam yira le'inayim, v'Hashem yira le'levav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees what's in a person's heart. And it doesn't matter to me that Eliyav seems so impressive on the outside and that all of you think he's going to be the leader of the family and the leader of the community. Hashem yira le'levav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees what's inside of our heart. And that goes in both directions. Sometimes you have very impressive looking people, and the more you get to know them, the more you understand what's inside of their heart and how unimpressive they actually are. In every sphere of influence, we see this. On the other hand, sometimes you have a person who on the externals doesn't seem very impressive to you, doesn't have it together. And you get to know that person and you realize what they're really about, what's inside. And it gives you an insight, it gives you a window, it gives you a perspective into the greatness of a human being in both directions, as we mentioned. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, always remember that. Finally, when Shmuel finds David HaMelech, the Sukkim go into a great description. He goes through this son and the other son, oh, must be this one. And then they say, okay, I must have the wrong family. Is there anybody else in this family? They say, yeah, we have this little kid, David, but he's a nobody, he's a nothing. It can't be that that's what God meant when he told you to come and anoint a king. Finally, he finds David, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kum mashcheu kizehu. Yes, yes, this is the one. This is the one because Hashem yira lalevav. I see what's inside of his heart. And when you read through Tehillim, you see what kind of heart David HaMelech actually had. So that was the first challenge of his life. I think today, if we had a kid like that, he would be in therapy for the rest of his life. Right? But David HaMelech was not, and he figured it out, and he overcame. But that was the smallest of his challenges. That his own family didn't believe in him, probably it weighed on his self-confidence, but yet he overcame. And then he has the struggle with Goliath. And then you have the story of David and Shaul HaMelech, which was also, his life was in danger and he was running. We're told, Bibarcho Mipnei Avshalom. We then have the story of David and his own son Avshalom, who's trying to kill his own father. How can this be? How could such a thing happen? But David HaMelech almost loses his life because of his own son. We have the story of David and Bathsheba, another very complicated story. David HaMelech has a very rough, very turbulent life. Very, very stormy life. Until finally we're told, look here in number Aleph, Vayihi ki yashav HaMelech bebeiso. Finally, when David HaMelech is in his home, in his palace, v'Hashem hi niach lo misaviv mikol oivav, and finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows all of his problems to be put aside. So, Goliath is quieted down, and Avshalom is killed, and Shaul HaMelech is no longer, and all of these problems are finally on the side. Vayomer HaMelech al Nasan HaNavi. And I take this as a big musar also. What do you do when you have nothing to worry about? I know, it's never happened. Jewish mothers in the room, it has never happened. I got it. But there must be a time in your life when you have a few extra moments, when there's actually nothing that you need to be worrying about at the moment. Of course, we always have other things, but there are times when we have open space in our minds where we don't have anything immediate to worry about. So what do you do then? David HaMelech, after a whole life of suffering and tragedy and running away and upheaval and very, very great turbulence everywhere he turned, finally has a chance to have a few moments to himself, a few moments of quiet. So what do you do? All right, let's go to the Bahamas. Need some quiet? Let me go enjoy life. You're only going to live once, right? David HaMelech teaches us, what do you do when you have free time? It's hard to plan things properly when you have so much on your head. But now that I have free time, obviously, the first thing I'm going to worry about is, why is there no Beis HaMikdash? Of course, right? What else are you going to do with your free time? Does this not amaze anybody? I would have said David HaMelech is deserving of just living out the rest of his life quietly, peacefully. Leave me alone. Just let me be. David HaMelech immediately, after realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given him a sense of serenity, finally, at one point in his life, turns to the Navi. Vayomer HaMelech al Nasan HaNavi. David HaMelech says to Nasan, who is the Navi at the time, Re'ena Anochi Yoshed Bebeis Arazim. Look, I'm living in this beautiful edifice, in this palace, in this fortress, this citadel. We've seen Migdal David. Who knows if that's really what it was, but we know that there were big castles and big palaces that David HaMelech lived in. Va'aron ha'elokim yoshe b'soch ha'iria. And the Aron, which is representative of everything spiritual that we believe in, doesn't have a home? God doesn't have a resting place in this world? How can that be? David HaMelech feels it's disrespectful, it's insulting And to me, that itself is amazing. How selfless of a person he was. That the moment he finally has some serenity and some quiet, some peace and some calm in his life, the first thing that's on his mind is, how am I going to take care of God? How am I going to take care of somebody else? What can I do? So the Navi turns back to him and he says, "Vayomer nasan el hamelech, kol asher b'levavcha leich aseh ki Hashem imach." I want you to know you have my permission, you have a clearance. Whatever you want to do, God will be with you. Wow. That's pretty amazing. So let's go ahead. So David HaMelech decides he's going ahead. Look at the next paragraph. Vayi b'layla hu vayi dvar Hashem el nasan leimar. That evening, God appears to the Navi Nasan and he says, "Leich v'amarta el avdi el David. Go communicate to David HaMelech, ko amar Hashem, ha'ata tibneh li bayis l'shifti. Is it your intention, David, to build a Beis HaMikdash for me? Ki lo yashavti b'bayis l'miyom ha'alosi es b'nei Yisrael mi'mitzrayim v'ad hayom hazeh. You know that I've had no permanent resting place from the time that I brought the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim until today. V'ayem ishalech ba'olu v'mishkan. I was in some kind of temporary housing, and we all know that that is very uncomfortable. Somebody said to me, not realizing, you know, these evacuees, it's not so bad. They're living in hotels, it's not so bad. Not so bad. You're out of your home. If you don't have a home, doesn't matter where you are, you're just not comfortable, you can't be yourself. This woman who was here this past week, we were talking a lot about her own story. I was talking to her about grieving personally and not only being out in the public. It's something that I always wonder. Why in Israel it's assumed that anybody who loses a relative automatically has to go on TV. That's not normal. This is not a normal phenomenon. When we lose relatives, we grieve and we mourn, and it's healthy, and we're supposed to. We don't go on TV. In Israel, when you lose a relative, you go do interviews and speak all over the world. It's a different process. I'm not sure that it's always so healthy. I don't know. It doesn't seem so healthy to me. So we were talking about it. And she said to me something which was so obvious, but I didn't think of on my own. I don't have a house to grieve in. I don't have a space. I don't have 5 minutes to myself. I'm in a hotel with kids on my head. I don't have a bedroom. I have 2 rooms in a hotel for myself and my 6 children. I don't have a place. My kids aren't in school. I don't have my own bed. I don't have anything. The grieving process cannot even begin. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Nasan HaNavi, you understand that along the way there was a Mishkan, there was this, there was that, but all of those were temporary. There was no home. And I've never felt comfortable in this world since I took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Ve'ata, ko samar la'avdi le'David, ko amar Hashem Tzevakos, please tell David, ani lekachticha min ha'nave me'achar hatzon, lios nagid al ami al Yisrael. David HaMelech, you know how much I appreciate and love you. You know how much I admire and respect you. You know that nobody believed that you were going to be the leader, but I chose you. I sent the Navi to get you when nobody in your family believed it. And that's how much I appreciate who you are. However, I want you to know, Ve'eya imcha b'chal asher halachta. I was with you the whole way. Ve'achrusas kalai vecha mipanecha. Don't you see, as much as you had difficulty in your life, don't you realize how much I have saved you? You should have died so many times. Don't you realize that I've always been there with you? And I have made you the most important personality in the Jewish community. It's because I really believe in you. Skip to Psukim. I want you to know, all good things come to an end. At some point, you're not going to be here forever. I'm sorry to break you the bad news, but David HaMelech, you're a human being like everybody else. You're not going to live forever. I want you to know you're going to have children, and I will make sure that those children that you have will perpetuate your legacy, will be kings as well. Shlomo. And I want you to know, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who Yivne Bayis the Shmi? He will be the one to build the Beis HaMikdash. Ani yelo la'av v'hu yeli l'ben. I will be his father, and he will be my child. Sounds beautiful. But that's a dagger in the heart of David HaMelech. Why? All he wanted was to build a Beis HaMikdash. And the Ribono Shel Olam gives him a whole speech and tells him, I love you, David, and I chose you, and look what I've done for you, and I've been with you all along, but you're not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Is there anybody who cares more about this project than I do? What do you mean I'm not building the Beis HaMikdash? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here in this conversation, in Sefer Shmuel, doesn't really explain exactly what the reason why there was an objection. But later on, in Divrei HaYamim, the Psukim tell us why HaKadosh Baruch Hu objected to David HaMelech being involved. And we're told, because Dam Lerov Shafachta. David HaMelech, you're an amazing person. But unfortunately, you have blood on your hands. You have killed so many people. Those are not the hands that can build the Beis HaMikdash. That's very hard, just as an aside. It's very hard to understand that. Who did David HaMelech actually kill throughout his life? If I were to ask you, you have these beautiful chayalim today who are going out and killing people. Would you call them murderers? Chas v'chalila. What are they? Heroes. Why are they heroes? Because they're killing people who need to be killed. The Rambam writes, Hamarachem al ha'achzari. You're not called a merachem, you're not called a compassionate person if you have compassion on the wrong people. If you have compassion on terrorists, that's not called being compassionate, that's called being evil. Sometimes, as much as we don't want to be involved in murder, sometimes people's lives need to be taken. There is no other choice. So who do you think David HaMelech was actually killing in his life? He wasn't just going around murdering members of the community. Of course not. So what was he doing? He was fighting the wars on behalf of the Jewish people. I would imagine he was like the mefaked of the army, who was giving instructions about how to fend off the terrorists. No. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, but when we build the Beis HaMikdash, I know that everything you did was L'Shem Shamayim, and all the people that lost their lives as a result of your involvement deserve to lose their lives and needed to lose their lives. But those hands cannot build a Beis HaMikdash. That's very hard. This is the opening to an entire discussion today. The Gemara says, Kohen shaharagas hanefesh lo yisa es kapav. It says that a Kohen who is involved in killing someone is not allowed to duchen. He's not allowed to give Berchas Kohanim, because there's blood on his hands. And the question today is, again, in Chutz La'aretz, it's not the same because we don't have Berchas Kohanim every day. But if you live in Eretz Yisrael, and you're a Kohen, and you are supposed to do Berchas Kohanim every single day, and you went out to fight in Gaza, and you killed a terrorist, are we going to tell you that for the rest of your life, you're never allowed to duchen again? Can that really be? That's a very painful question. It is a major question that is asked by all the poskim of the last generation. Rabbi Avadia Yosef, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Soloveitchik had a lot to say about it. It's a big discussion. I remember fondly, I got a shaila a couple of years ago from a Chayal Bodeid who was in Shechem, I think he wrote to me. He said, I just listened to your shir yesterday, I'm a Kohen, and you didn't give the answer. So what's the story? So I told him, I would feel much more comfortable if you would stop listening to my shir and do what you're supposed to be doing. But his question was fascinating. He said to me that he is a sniper in the army. And he said, I actually keep up with him ever since. And he told me that the way it works, I don't know anything about being a sniper. It's not anything I have expertise in. So he told me that the way it works in the sniper unit is they always work in pairs of two. Because you need to have such precision, so you need one person who's going to set up the scope and make sure everything is perfectly aligned, and the other one pulls the trigger. So without one or the other, the job will not be done successfully. So he said, I am just the spotter, I'm not the shooter. So he wanted to know, even if you say that a Kohen, Shehareges HaNefesh Lo Yiseh Kapov, applies to a Kohen in the Israeli army who kills a terrorist, would that even include me? I'm not the one who shoots. I'm just the one who spots. I'm the one who sets up the target and makes sure that the scope is in the right place. But without me, he wouldn't be able to do his job. Amazing. These are our chayalim. I'm always inspired. I think it's amazing. You know that a couple of weeks ago, I was called by Rabbi David Gottlieb, who runs a beautiful organization called Salash. Tzava L'Shem Shamayim. They ran this organization before this war, and they do great things. And they really provide spiritual sustenance to many of the chayalim. And he called me a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was 2 months ago already. He called me and he said, you know, the chayalim are going out and everyone's giving them all kinds of things. He said, we need to take care of them spiritually. We need to make sure they have tzitzis and tefillin, and we have to make sure they have everything, whatever. And he's doing an amazing job. And then he said that there were a number of dati chayalim who came to him and said, we're b'nai yeshiva. It's not good enough that we have a sitter. It's not good enough that we have a tzitzis and a tefillin. We have all that. We need more than that. We want to learn. So he asked me if I can speak to Rav Asher Weiss and ask him if we can make a special run of the Sefer Minchas Asher Ala Torah in a small pocket-sized edition that will fit in the pocket of a chayal. And I was so amazed by that request. I was so amazed. This is what the chayalim want to do. When they're sitting there fighting on the front lines, all they want is to learn through a piece of Minchas Asher. It's amazing to me. He printed 2,000 copies. We picked out some of the highlights from the Sefer on Bereishis. Of course, you can't print the whole thing. It's a big 500-page Sefer. So we printed, I think it was 150 pages, soft cover, fits in the pocket. He said within 4 days, all 2,000 copies were taken. And he sent me videos of these chayalim sitting there learning together. It's just so amazing. So we did another run for Hanukkah, a special Hanukkah edition, all on Inyanei Hanukkah, gave it out a week before Hanukkah. And again, I received videos of this. It was just, these are the people fighting for us. My father always told us as children, I forgot where you read the story, maybe it's in Sipuri Hasidim, I don't know, but he said that he used to tell us a lot of these stories when we were kids. So he told us once that in Valazhin, there was there were a lot of maskilim at the time, a lot of people who did not believe in traditional Orthodox Judaism. But they were very smart, they were very bright, and they came to learn in the yeshiva anyway. And there was a lot of tension between these students and those students, and it was complicated. And at some point, 1 year on Purim, there was a Purim spiel that the maskilim decided to put on in the yeshiva in Valazhin. So they had a Purim spiel and they were making fun how, you know, the Torah describes how a Jewish army is supposed to go to fight. So it says, "Mi hayari v'rachaleva, whoever is afraid should not go out to fight." Now, what does it mean, someone who's afraid shouldn't go out to fight? Every chayal is afraid. I mean, you're afraid. You're facing death in the face. So what are you going to do? So the Gemara says it doesn't mean somebody who's physically afraid. It means somebody who's yare me'avero shebiyado, somebody who's concerned that maybe he's done too many things wrong, so he's not going to have enough schusim to survive the war, and therefore he shouldn't go. Don't put yourself in a situation of sakana. So they were having a Purim spiel that year in Valazhin, making fun of the Torah's assembly of an army. So they had the Chafetz Chaim was the general of the army, and the Netziv was the other general of the army, these two old Rashi Yeshiva who were in their 80s or 90s who don't know anything about war. So they were making fun how they were the two generals. And then they start going through, you know, calling people up. So, all right, have you ever missed Zman Kriya Shema? Okay, you're out. Have you ever woken up late to Davin? All right, you're out. Have you ever eaten something without saying a bracha? You ate something without a hashkacha? They're throwing everybody out. The bottom line was the only two people left were the Chafetz Chaim and the Netziv, and that was the Jewish army. Fine, everyone was laughing. That was the end of the story. My father said that the Netziv stood up. He wasn't there, of course. This is the way the story is reported. He said that the Netziv stood up and he said, it's very funny, but you missed the end of the story. The end of the story is we won the war. The end of the story is that's what Jewish armies always have been, and Jewish armies win wars that way. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fights with us. Ki Hashem Elokecha Mishalech Bekerav Machanecha. I think I told the story here a few weeks ago. No? About the guy who was our Shomer in Israel when I went a few weeks ago. I still think about this guy, Nehorai. It's amazing. So he was supposed to be with us from Sunday evening till Thursday night. He comes to me Wednesday night and he says, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave tonight. I'm not going to be able to be with you tomorrow. And I said, why? He tells me, well, I'm part of a unit where they jump out of helicopters. I forgot which unit in the army it is. And tomorrow we're jumping out onto that El Shifa hospital. That's when the whole thing was going on in the hospital. So, my unit was called up. We have to go. I said, okay. I was so taken aback. I didn't know what to say. He's a young man, married for a year. And I took out a piece of paper and I said, okay, I'll daven for you. And he looks at me like I fell off another planet. And he says, you're going to daven for me? Yesh li avtacha. Ki Hashem Elokecha mishalech bekerav machanecha. You have nobody protecting you. You're living in Chutz Laretz. Look what's going on there. He takes out a piece of paper. He says, I'll daven for you. I'll be fine. I'll daven for you. But that's what our soldiers believe. That's what they believe. That said the Netziv, that's the end of the story. The end of the story is, yes, the Jewish army was the Chafetz Chaim and the Netziv, and they won. That's the story. That's the story of the Jewish people. That's who we are. How did we get there? I don't know. But, yes, we got there because David HaMelech was told, Dam l'rov shafachta, and unfortunately you are unable to build a Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech decides he's at least going to make the original plan to build a Beis HaMikdash. So, he goes to a place that was owned by Aravna HaYevusi. Aravna was Melech HaYevusim. That was his name. And he wants to at least prepare the space. If I'm not going to be able to build a Beis HaMikdash, at least I'll buy it. I'll purchase it. And he goes and they start having a whole discussion and negotiation back and forth. And finally, Aravna says to him, if your intention is really to build a Beis HaMikdash and to do something very special and holy for God, then I'll give you the place for free. And David HaMelech objects. And he says, absolutely not. Ki kano ekne me'oscha b'mechir. I'm going to pay full price. I'm going to pay full price. V'lo ala l'Hashem Elokai olos chinam. You hear that? I'll read it again. Ki lo. Ki kano ekne me'oscha b'mechir. I know you want to give me a bargain. I know you want to give it to me for free. I'm going to pay full price. V'lo ala l'Hashem Elokai olos chinam. I'm not looking for a workaround when it comes to my relationship and my service of the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm happy to work hard for it. I'm happy to pay for it. That's a lost art in our generation. Who's happy to work hard for anything? Very few people. My parents had a mechutin who passed away. His name was Rabbi Rafi Posen. He was a really special person. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in the old city on Rehov Mizgav Ladach. That's the same block as Eshat Torah, I think. So my brother-in-law is his son. This man was a Talmud Chacham, and he wrote Svarim. His PhD was on Targum Unkelus. You understand? He had a PhD in Targum Unkelus. How many people in the world even read Targum Unkelus? This man didn't just read it. He understood every word, and he knew why here the Targum writes this word, and there, in Sefer Dvarim, instead of Sefer Bereishis, he translates it differently. He worked his whole life to understand Targum Unkelus, and now he had printed two Svarim before he passed away, one on Bereishis, one on Shemos, and his children are finishing off the work from all of the papers that he left behind. And my brother-in-law said to me once, how many people do you know that spent 60 years of their life working on anything? Literally, his whole life working on something. How much are we willing to invest? How much are we willing to work? Now, if I were to choose what I was going to work on, it wouldn't be that. I would choose to work on something that a lot of people are going to be able to appreciate. This, I think, is speaking to a very small segment of the population, but okay. The point is, are we prepared to say like David HaMelech, I'm not going to take the easy way out. Kano ekne me'oscha b'mechir. I'm willing to pay full price. I may have just made a simcha this week, and there may have been a vendor. Maybe yes or maybe no. I'm just saying. Such things do happen. May have been a vendor who told me, if you give me cash, I just won't charge tax. You know, we live in a civilized country. We do pay taxes. We don't just do it because we're nice people. We do it because we're obligated to do it. And I was shocked. You want to tell that to other customers? It's fine. I know you're trying to be nice to the rabbi. But tell that to other people. Do you think I'm actually going to listen to you? Do you think I'm actually going to not pay taxes that I'm obligated to pay? I made a simcha. I have to pay for it. It's okay. What's the hava mina? Well, you get parsonage. Parsonage. What does parsonage have to do with my son's bar mitzvah? It's a pella to me. I would venture to say most of us who would be given such an offer would say, oh, that's nice. It's really nice of him. When you take a step back and you actually think about what is he actually saying? He's telling me to cheat the government. He's telling me to be a dishonest Jew. Like, that's not who I am. That's not how I live. That's not how any of us should live. Dishonesty is not our way. Chosamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. Is anyone going to catch you? Probably not. Do they care that you, you know, a few $100 here or there? I don't know. That's not the point. Are you an honest person? Are you just looking for workarounds? Are you looking to just take an easy way out? In every aspect of life, in every area of life that we live with. And it's the same thing by Avraham Avinu. When he wants to find a place for Sarah Yemena to be buried and he's negotiating and Ephron says, I'll give it to you for free. I love you, Avraham Avinu. He says, no. I'm not taking shortcuts. This is my wife. You don't take shortcuts with your spouse. You don't take shortcuts with your God. You don't take shortcuts with anything. It ends up coming back to haunt you. Just be straight. Just be honest. Just be upstanding. That's what David HaMelech taught us here. That's what Avraham Avinu taught us as well. And from here, the Zohar HaKadosh learns that when we are observing a mitzvah, we shouldn't be uncomfortable. How many people complain about things, how much it costs, this, that? We waste plenty of money on other things, at least in our community. Maybe other communities are a little more careful. In our community, we waste plenty of money on other things. We don't need to complain about the little bit that we spend once in a while on a mitzvah. It's not so bad. Says the Zohar HaKadosh, look at the lives of Avraham Avinu, at David HaMelech, and understand it's okay. And this is what the Ramban explains. If you look carefully in Parshas Noach, the Torah says that there were different kinds of animals that came into the Teva. Some of them were kosher animals, and some of them were non-kosher animals. You ever noticed what was the difference between the kosher animals and the non-kosher animals? Two differences. What were they? The quantity, right? There were a different number of kosher animals than non-kosher animals that came into the Teva. Secondly, says the Ramban, that the behemos tameos, the non-kosher animals, came to the Teva by themselves. They came to Noach by themselves. And the kosher animals, Noach had to go around and collect them and bring them into the Teva. That's a big job. That's a big job. Every kosher animal, you have to go around to the forest, to the wilderness, everywhere and find them and bring pairs of them into the Teva. Why couldn't the Ribono Shel Olam send them there just like he sent the lions and the bears and everything else? Says the Ramban, because Noach knew that after this calamity would be over, after everything would subside, he was going to offer karbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in gratitude for his being saved. When a person offers a karban, he can only bring an animal that is kosher. I'm going to bring an animal that I didn't work hard for at all? What kind of value does that karban have, says the Ramban. So of course, the Ribono Shel Olam didn't want him to work hard. So all the non-kosher animals came on their own. Why does Noach have to work? When it comes to offering a karban, Noach understood, I need to invest in it. It's my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the line here. I need to be willing to be involved. I need to get my hands dirty. And if it means I'm going to be wandering around the forest looking for all the animals that I need to get, that's okay. That's what will make the karban meaningful. The Maharal has an interesting comment where the Maharal writes that There's only one place in Chazal where we are told about the concept of Schar Psios. Schar Psios means you get reward for all the steps that you take to get to somewhere. So where is that mentioned? Anybody know? It's the strangest place. Strangest place. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota, there was an almana, a woman who had lost her husband who used to go to shul. And she was trying to figure out which shul she should go to. And the Gemara says, oh, if you go to the shul that's further away from your house, you get special schar psios. If you go to the shul that's next door to you, all right, convenience. If you go to the shul that's far away from you, you get schar psios. Interesting. Interesting that it talks about some anonymous almana who decided to walk far to shul. I don't know. I don't know why that's the choice of the story, but that's the only time we find it. Says the Maharal, why doesn't it say that if I have a lulav and I put it at the very end of the community and I walk on Sukkot morning to go find my lulav 3.5 miles, I get more schar than if I just have it in my living room? Why is it the same thing? The Maharal says because tefillah is all about our relationship. It's expressing our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you talk about a relationship with anyone, with any entity, with any person, with anybody, the more you invest in it, the more meaningful it is. We all know that to be the case in every aspect of our lives. When you talk about a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's no different. You can come to shul that's next door to you, open a sitter, close the sitter, and leave. How much did you invest in this relationship just now? Yes, of course, you invested more than people who don't come to shul at all. And you invested more than people who don't daven at all. But how strong is your marriage going to be? How strong is your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to be? We've all seen couples who just never see each other. And it's better that way. Because they don't have a relationship. It's just very unhealthy. It's toxic. So it's better. They wave good morning in the morning. They say good evening at night. They're all running their own schedules, doing their own things. That's not called a strong and healthy marriage. A strong and healthy marriage, we all know, is when we invest in our relationships with our children, with our spouses, with our parents. When we give time, when we give effort and energy to those relationships, we know that there's something that comes back from it. We know that that develops something strong. Says the Maharal, if you understand what tefillah is all about and you realize that tefillah is your opportunity to build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you can also understand why the Gemara talks about Schar Psios specifically by tefillah. Because Schar Psios is the opportunity to realize that we are investing. And the more we invest, the more we get out of it. And the stronger we build that relationship and everything that it represents for us. So that, David HaMelech says, is something that he would not accept. David HaMelech tells us, even though I'm being offered the Beis HaMikdash for free, even though I'm being told I can get everything that I want and I'm not going to have to pay for it, I don't want to take shortcuts. I want to show the Ribono Shel Olam how much I value this relationship. How much do you value it? How much does it mean to you? Do you really care? Or is it something that doesn't really matter to you? You come home on Erev Shabbos. Some people buy flowers for their spouses. Imagine somebody comes home and says, you know, I was just outside on the street and I saw there were flowers that fell off a truck, fell out on the street. I picked them up. I decided, let me bring them home for you. Oh, you're so sweet. You know, you really, I see how much you thought about me. I see how much you appreciate me. It means nothing. Why? But your house is the same beautiful. The same flowers are there. Nachon? We all agree. But it means nothing. Why does it mean nothing? Because you invested nothing. Because you didn't show me that you cared. You didn't show me that you cared at all. And that, David HaMelech says, is a point we need to think about. I feel badly that I didn't even get into anything about the Bayis Rishon. This was only about the prelude going into the Bayis Rishon. There's so much more to talk about. Suffice it to say, the Bayis Rishon was a period of tremendous upheaval. Sometimes we talk about the utopian life of the Beis HaMikdash and we don't realize how upside down things were then too. It's not only now. My point in raising that is there's hope for us. There were plenty of dysfunctional Jewish communities even back then. It's not only now. And when you read about the stories of what happened in the days of the Bayis Rishon. So Shlomo HaMelech, we know him as the king who built the Beis HaMikdash, but you know, that wasn't so simple. David HaMelech had a bunch of wives and he had a bunch of children. And all of those kids were fighting over who's going to be the king. So we start with the first son of David HaMelech, whose name was Amnon. Amnon was the oldest child of David HaMelech. At some point, he raped his sister, Tamar. His brother, Absalom, his half-brother, who was also a son of David HaMelech, was so angry how somebody can do this to his sister. Not just somebody can do it, his own brother did it to his sister. And Absalom goes ahead and kills his brother Amnon. That's the beginning of David HaMelech's family life. One son rapes a sister. The other brother comes and kills that son. So he's out of the picture. He's not going to be the king because he's dead. Then the second son is one by the name of Kilav. The Mefarshim are not sure exactly why he did not want to become king. Most of them explain it's because he died young as well. So you have the first son was Amnon. The second son is Kilav. He's gone. And the third son is Absalom. Absalom very much wants to lead the Jewish people. And as we know, Absalom has this whole issue with his own father. Absalom revolts against his father. In the end, Absalom also gets killed. And that's also an amazing story to think about. Absalom, as much as he gave his father so much heartache, as much as he gave his father so much pain, David HaMelech loved his son nonetheless. And the Sukkim describe how after Absalom was killed, David HaMelech got up and he cried. Bini, bini Absalom. He couldn't stop crying that his son Absalom was killed, and it didn't matter how much Absalom pained him. There's a story about Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, which I've always found to be very touching. That on one occasion when there was a war going on in Eretz Israel, he went and he asked somebody to drive him to Kever Absalom. And they asked him, we know that there's a concept of going to Kibrit Tzadikin. You go to Rachel Imenu, you go to Maris HaMachpelah, you go to whoever it is. Why would you go to Kever Absalom, a Russia? Why would you go to him? He tried to kill his father. Look what he did. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz said, you look at the story of Absalom and you see how much he rebelled against his father, and you see, nonetheless, how much Rachmanus his father had on him. And he said, I go to Kever Absalom to evoke those emotions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He should look at us and see how far we have gone from where we're supposed to be and how much we have rebelled against him. And we hope that he'll be just as compassionate to his children as David HaMelech was. The same way David HaMelech cried, Bini, Bini Absalom, after his son died. He should have been celebrating that his son was finally out of his life. I don't have to worry about him anymore. It's not my problem. I don't have to run and hide in caves because my son wants to kill me. And yet, with all of that, despite that, a father is a father, a mother is a mother. Parents are parents. And David HaMelech taught us that even Absalom, we still have a very soft place in our heart for every child. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz said that he felt that is a powerful emotion to evoke when you go and you daven by Kever Absalom and you ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be merachem on us, just like David HaMelech was merachem on his own son. So that's three children out of the equation. It is Amnon, Absalom, and Kilav. We then get to the fourth, who was Adoniah. And Adoniah decided he was going to become the Melech, the most obvious choice. He was the next one in line. And a whole fight breaks out, and Adoniah HaMelech basically puts together for himself an inaugural ceremony, and he invites basically the entire Jewish community except for Shlomo Avdecha Lo Kara. Shlomo HaMelech was the only one who wasn't invited, together with his supporters. And there they are, celebrating this milestone of Adoniah crowning himself as king. By the way, it was while his father was still alive. What an amazing chutzpah. You think your kids are chutzpahic sometimes? Look at this. Amazing. Adoniah HaMelech crowned himself as king while his father was still leading the Jewish people. And at that time, Shlomo HaMelech's mother, Bathsheba, goes to talk to her husband, David HaMelech, and he says, are you aware of the fact that there is an inaugural ceremony going on outside with your son, Adonijah? You promised that my son Shlomo was going to be the Melech. And a whole problem ensues, and basically David HaMelech says that his son Shlomo is going to be the king. Once that happens, Shlomo HaMelech sends a message to his brother, by the way, you're not king anymore, I'm king. And Adonijah runs for his life, and he's afraid that his brother Shlomo is going to kill him. It's like a recurrent theme in David HaMelech's family. It's really a lot of kinah, a lot of difficult relationships there, which also I take a lot from. You know, sometimes you look around at families and you say, look what they have, look how prestigious, look how amazing, and you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Sometimes the siblings are killing each other, and sometimes the family is dysfunctional. Sometimes there's a lot happening that you shouldn't be jealous of. So what you see is not always what you get, and most often is not what you get. So some of us have insight into what is going on behind that door. Trust me on this one. It's not always what you see is what you get. So here, what I find amazing about this also is, you can go from one moment to the next, thinking that your Melech Yisrael, Adonijah, put together an inaugural celebration that the entire Jewish community came to celebrate him. And in one second, he goes from being the most powerful person in the Jewish community to being a fugitive running for his life because his brother, who's now the king, is going to kill him. It's amazing how life can turn on us like that. And we all see it. Life can turn on people. You can be here, and you can end up there in one second. In one second. And it gives us pause to be living life with a little bit of humility, to realize life is very unstable. Life is sometimes very unsettling. And we shouldn't be so sure of how things are going to go, or just because we plan something doesn't always mean that it's going to plan out the way we want it to. But this was the way that Shlomo HaMelech comes into power. Again, very contentious, very, very complicated, very difficult. And after all of that is finally behind him, Shlomo HaMelech decides it's time to build the Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised my father that I was going to be the one to build the Beis HaMikdash, and this is my job. And that is what he did. And Shlomo HaMelech took many years to build this Beis HaMikdash. He had many volunteers. He was collecting money from every shevet. He had, the psukim tell us, this project was involving 150,000 workers who were working on this every single day. And they all worked together to try to figure out how to finance, how to build, and how to protect everything that they were doing for the Beis HaMikdash. All of that landed up being very, very complicated because Shlomo HaMelech levied a tax on each of the Shvatim, but he gave certain privileges to one Shevet over the other. And that also led to a whole revolt, and it led to a whole problem. And as you continue to read through the Psukim again, I would encourage you to go through a little bit, you see how complicated the times of the Bayis Rishon were, and the Malchus split, and there was Malchus Yehuda, and the rest, and the Shvatim were split, and nobody was getting along, and one thing after another, and then we learn about Achav, who went and killed all the Jewish Chachamim. Really, really unbelievable. Really an unbelievable time in Jewish history when you read about it. And when we think about Churban Bayis Rishon, and we think about all that was lost, and how Nebuchadnezzar was able to come in on Asar B'Teves and actually begin to lay siege on Yerushalayim, it's an opportunity for us to realize that when we are weak as a people because there's so much fragmentation, because there's so much infighting, our enemies see the weakness. And history has just repeated itself. The Psukim describe in great detail how the entire period of the Bayis Rishon, there was so much strife. There was so much division in the Jewish community. You think judicial reform is bad? You had Jewish kings who were killing all the Chachmei Yisrael. You had a Jewish king who came to Eliyahu HaNavi himself, Eliyahu HaNavi, and said, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to do the same thing to you that I did to everyone else. I'm going to kill you too. To Eliyahu HaNavi. This was the period of the Bayis Rishon. Is it any wonder to you that our enemies sense that weakness, see that we're not a united people, and come and destroy at a time of great vulnerability? Is there a better time to destroy than that? And history has just repeated itself. And we all know, and we all see what that devastation is. We all understand how toxic it is to be in that horrific place of the Jewish community, not being able to respect each other, not being able to look at each other, not being able to work together. No shituf pu'ula. Look where it leads. Look where it leads. Look where we are. Halavai, we should, this Asara B'Teves, not only think about Churban Bayis Rishon, but let's use it as an opportunity to think about Churban of our community, to think about the fragmentation that existed then, the fragmentation that continues to exist today, and the fragmentation that was the introduction to this terrible, terrible tragedy and calamity that we're living through. I actually watched an interview yesterday with Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau. He did it for the Amudim program. And Rabbi Lau made a point which I thought was very powerful. He said, everyone's saying this is the Holocaust. He said, it's not the Holocaust. He said, I'm very offended that people are saying this is the Holocaust. This is not the Holocaust. It's terrible. It's a massacre. It's a pogrom. It's not the Holocaust. He said, Holocaust was a term that was used once in Jewish history. It should never be used again because hayo lo tiyeh, that will never happen again. That cannot happen again. He said, the Holocaust, we had nowhere to go. We had nobody supporting us. We had nobody to fight for us. We had no army. We had no country. This is not the Holocaust. This is an existential threat to the Jewish people. But we do have means today. We have a land. We have support. We have money. We're a civilized country. We're a civilized people. And we hope that we'll have the opportunity to stand up for ourselves. And to me, that was a very important perspective. I think it's important to think about that as well. After everything he lived through in his life, his perspective, I think, is worth very much worth our attention and very much worth our thought. This Asara B'Teves, Yahafoch lanu, l'sason u'l'simcha l'madim tovim, as the Navi Zechariah says, after the Bayis Rishon was destroyed and they had this fast day, it then came the time of the Bayis Sheni, and they came to the Navi Zechariah and they said, now that we have a Beis HaMikdash, does it make sense that we should now have something? Hi. You should now have some. Thank you for protecting us and for being here. Thank you so much. Okay, thank you. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely, thank you.